Welcome to Original Mind Zen Sangha. Today's Dharma talk is given by Andre Tayson Hallo.
Tonight's talk is going to be called Living the Question. The first ancestor, historically as we can tell, of Zen Buddhism, besides the Buddha, was a man by the name of Bodhidharma, and he came from India, and he brought with him what we would call Chan or Zen Buddhism. And the story goes that one of the first people he encountered was this emperor called Wu, and the emperor had given an enormous amount of wealth and property to donated it to Buddhist temples, and in order to build shrines. And so he was kind of wanted to toot his own horn, so he asked Bodhidharma, this new monk from India, said, "So how much merits did I earn for devoting all this?" Bodhidharma just shook his head and said, "None whatsoever." The emperor didn't like to hear that. "What do you mean? Why did I spend all this vast fortune on temples?" So then he said, "Well, what the heck is the heart of the Buddhist teaching?" And Bodhidharma said, "Vast emptiness, nothing holy." And the emperor's like, "This does not sound like anything I've ever heard. Doesn't sound like any Buddhism I've ever studied, or the words from any Buddhist teacher." So finally he said, "Well, who are you?" And Bodhidharma famously said, "Don't know." And that's the central question in our lives, is who am I? We think we know the answer. But when we think we know the answer, we're closing a door to life. Because when we assume that we know who we are, we turn ourselves into a solid object, which is incapable of being flexible, incapable of adaptation, incapable of doing all of those things that we tell ourselves we can't do. "Well, I just can't do that. That's not the kind of person that I am." Well, that's awfully convenient. Actually, it's not convenient at all, because it's more of a prison. Literally, it's a prison of thoughts that keep us locked inside of a rigid way of engaging the world. The Buddha identified the chief source of suffering as craving. And when you sit in meditation, you have a lot of craving, a lot of impulses that just come up, and they seem so insistent and so persuasive. "Get up, get out of here, go eat something, scratch your leg, shift your body. Oh, I forgot to make my lunch, gotta do that." So all these things start to pop inside of our mind. And when we identify with them, they seem to be my thoughts or aspects of my life. But what the Buddha is really teaching us is that what we misidentify as an I, the ego, is actually just craving itself. Craving for satisfaction, craving for pleasure, craving for to avoid pain. Because when we investigate this I, all we see are impulses, drives, desires, fears perhaps. But there's no central I that's experiencing these. Rather, when we look inwards deeply and we ask, "Who am I? Who's the one who's anxious? Who's the one who's frustrated? Who's the one that's angry right now?" There is only anger. There's only anxiety. There's only frustration. There's only joy. But there's no one behind the scenes watching. I like to think of in The Simpsons, Homer sits inside of his, behind his screen at his job, watching all these cameras inside of the nuclear power plant. And so we think that there's someone looking out at the world, like Homer's looking at these screens, but there's really just the screens themselves. There's just hearing, there's just smelling, there's just tasting, there's just touching. There is no solid eye that's experiencing that. Because if there were, then, well, who's experiencing that eye? I mean, we just invite this infinite regress of eyes that just goes on and on and on. Rather, there's just the immediacy of experience. So the eye, when we look at it, turns out to be this black hole of craving. The eye is craving. When we sit in our practice, we can see that. It may appear like there's an eye that wants these things, but there's just the desires themselves. And that's extremely liberating because we realize I don't have to act on any of these impulses. They don't own me in any way because there's no I, to no fundamental concrete I that needs any of these things. There's just the assumption that there's this I. So Emperor Wu asks Bodhidharma, who are you? He says, don't know. I am the freedom. The freedom of being pinned down as one single thing. It's like asking the question, what's the wind is blowing outside? What's the source of the wind blowing? Well, you're not going to identify one thing because it's just a series of interactions of conditions. It's the moon. It's another weather system or pattern. But there's no one thing that's causing the wind to blow any more than there's one thing or one eye that's experiencing any of these sensations or emotions. But we want there to be because it gives us the illusion of permanence, the feeling that I'm the same person I was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. That can be a prison. Because if I'm that same person, intrinsically, then that I'm trapped inside that same story that that person was 15 or 20 or 30 years ago, whoever that person is, the victim, the perfectionist. Choose your narrative type of choice. So we get cornered by these beliefs of who we are. But the self is not something that occurs naturally. It's something that we do. We actively do. In the same way as your heart beats, we self. Self there is a verb. Something that we actively do. That doesn't, when I say actively, doesn't mean consciously. Because I'm so accustomed to being Andre, I forget when I'm Andre-ing. That's empowering, though. Because Buddha means awakened one. It means to be awake to what's going on. So as I give these cues and these prompts, come back to what's real. That means stop wandering. Don't stop this wandering mind. And come back to what's actually present. Stop pursuing all of these notions or fears or anxieties as though they were yours and just come back to what's actually present. So it's basically becoming in control of the vehicle as opposed to allowing the boat just to drift downstream, which is what we normally do. We allow the story to carry us along. Who am I? That's of central importance in Zen practice, or I think any spiritual tradition. Who am I? Look deep inside. Investigate that thoroughly. Where is this I? I think I know. It feels like it has a definite location, but I can never put my finger on it. Bodhidharma challenges that idea that there is some sort of definite me. And instead, there's just the open spaciousness of experience. When you buy a house, for instance, you're not buying, sure, you're buying the walls, but what you're actually paying for is the space. You wouldn't just buy a ...3,000-square-foot home that's filled with walls. That'd be preposterous. Well, that's what we want the self to be, some sort of solid, certain thing, some sort of I that never changes. But it's the space that's in there. And that's what we are, is that capacity for, or potential for growth, change, transformation. Which means that I can be whatever I have the potential to be whatever it is that life requires I am at that moment. I just came back from a party at my house. There I was the host, or the husband, or the father. Here, I'm the teacher. When I go back there, I gotta take off these robes, literally, and go back and assume a different function. It's my ability to do that, or rather, it's my openness that allows me to do that. The fact that there is no definite I. Andre's a role that I put on. When I'm in school tomorrow, I'll be not Andre, but I'll be Mr. Hallow. And when if I knock on wood, God willing, I don't get pulled over. But if I did, I would be the guy who's saying, yes, sir, yes, ma'am. That when people, we get attached to our roles as, well, I'm the teacher. Well, not when you get pulled over by the police officer, you're not. Get out of the car. You're not in control anymore. Can we adapt to what life is offering us? Not knowing, what Bodhidharma says, don't know, allows us to be whoever or whatever situation requires. I'm reminded of Darwin. Most people misunderstand Darwin and they say, oh, well, it's only the strong survive, or it's the strongest species that survives. No, it's not. Because then we wouldn't have any weak creatures, would we? It's the species, or rather the individuals within the species, that can adapt to the environment that survive. You could have the strongest predator on Earth, T-Rex. Where is it? It's extinct because of its inability to change. We have that potential. But we only have the potential if we recognize it. And we recognize it when we ask ourselves, who am I? Just the question, which is a giant question mark in our lives, is enough to rattle the certainty that we usually feel when we think we know who we are. When I think I know who I am, I've cornered myself. I've trapped myself inside of an idea. And I'm going to obey that idea. I'm the victim. I'm the funny guy who never knows how to shut up and therefore says things that are inappropriate at inappropriate times. Or I'm the quiet one. I couldn't possibly say that. That's not who I am. I can't get on an airplane. I've been afraid for the past 30 years. Well, that's because we believe we are the same person that we were yesterday, the day before, the year before, 10 years before. Not knowing liberates us from that. So how do we do it? Right? Okay, that's the pitch. What do we do? Okay, let's get some actual practice. It's through intense investigation of who we think we are and over asking ourselves, who am I? Who is this person? It can be startling and disconcerting, because when I look inside, I don't find anybody. I really don't. If you've never looked inside of yourself, you may think that there's somebody in there. But when you start to look around, there's nobody at home. In the same way as my body continues to breathe without my executive orders, it just does what it needs to. My heart beats when it needs to. When I eat food, it digests on its own. In the same way, we could go through our lives without having this firm dictator of a mind, of an I who tells us this is the way things have to be. Who am I? over and over and over again without the need to come up with a verbal reply. That's the shift. That's the difficult shift. Is we usually, when we ask a question, we expect an answer. No, just the asking itself is liberating us because it implies or demands that we don't know the answer. Who am I? Subtext, I'm not who I think I am. I'm not who or what I think I am. Whoever I think I am is a story. I'm not a story. Whatever I think I am is an idea. I cannot be an idea. Who and what you are is beyond ideas, beyond stories, beyond concepts. So not knowing is most intimate, we say in Zen, because it's when you don't know, you get a little mental wiggle room. Then when somebody asks you, hey, can you come over and help me move on Sunday? You could say, let me check my calendar. Yeah, actually I can. Meanwhile, that's the last thing that you want to do. Or you don't think that you're capable of helping somebody. We're a lot more flexible than we give ourselves credit for. Just ask the T-Rex.
That was Andre Taysan Hallow. Thank you for joining Original Mind Zen Sangha.